Well, good morning, KRFY listeners, and thanks for tuning in to the morning show today, Wednesday, March 26th, last Wednesday in March for 2025. I'm Susie Prez here with my guests this morning. I have folks sitting here. I have Joyce Jowdy. She's the Community Engagement and Adult Program Coordinator with the Bonner County Library, and she brought along Matt Dry, one of the presenters with the next Community Connection program that's this Saturday at the library. And we'll hear all about Matt's adventures in Africa, and Joyce is going to tell us all about what's going on at the library. So thanks for being here, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. Appreciate it.
We always want to think about the weather first at a show like this. And from the National Weather Service, currently it's 41 degrees out. We have a high today of 68.
Whoa.
All right, we'll go with
fantastic.
That. It looks like we have areas of fog this morning and then mostly sunny. So it's not just warm temperatures, it's sunshine. And then tonight we have a low of 47 with an 80% chance of showers. I heard some wild weather going to happen down in Spokane. Who knows? And then on Thursday we have 90% chance of showers with a high of 58. So this is a little reprieve from the gray and dark wet weather, but we'll take it, right?
Absolutely. A nice little teaser for what's to come.
Yeah.
Love the sunshine.
That's it. That's the truth. So let's get started with our interview. Joyce, you're the engagement coordinator, adult programming coordinator. You have put together quite a program at the library, and we're going to focus a little bit on community connections. Is that what it's called?
Natural connections.
Natural connections, but it's kind of bringing the community together with really fun. I can't even believe how much fun you're having. So why don't you tell us about your program and kind of how it came about, and then we'll get into what's coming up Saturday.
Sure. Thanks so much, Susie. So we started a program at the on August 2023. We're almost coming up on 2 years, where one Saturday each month, we do a program called Natural Connections. It runs 10 to 4 on a Saturday usually. And we have all different programs during that lineup time and different modalities of learning, expression, and experience. We've had everything from a drum circle to gardening programs to author talks and experiences and art programs, all different kinds of activities, ways to learn things, experience, but like you said, bringing community together to share their expertise, as well as to learn from each other, explore together, make some connections, you know, get a sense of belonging in our community, and all those things that we have so much in common with and have abilities to gain from. So the next one is this Saturday, and that is March 29th, the last Saturday of the month, hard to believe already. And we'll start off at 10 a.m. So we hope people will come. And you can come for the whole day or just that time slot that perks your interest, or come and go.
You know what I think about natural connections is it expands our world. We live up here in North Idaho, and there's a lot going on, and people have interesting backgrounds and things to share. So that's kind of what I see Natural Connections brings to our community, is I can't think of the word right now, but just a wider range of information and ideas and expanding.
Absolutely. And people really like to experience things. You know, like the other month, some of you who came out got to make kimchi and take that home, you know, and not only have the recipes, but then, you know, taste it, share it with your family, get a sense of it. And then, you know, other times we'll make other things. This month's a little bit different, you know, than that usual, but hands-on has been a big component. And then in the summertime, we hope to be out back in the garden. As many people know, it's a demonstration garden. So there's pollinator garden examples, there's herbs, there's vegetables, and it's open to the community. You can come and browse, learn, and share. Yeah.
So I would encourage our listeners, if they're listening right now, to go to the website at the library and keep an eye on what's going on. There's a current events page? I mean, is that where they would go?
Yeah, they want to go to ebonnerlibrary.org and then go to the events page or go under where it says audiences and you can pull down what audience interests you. Maybe it's kids, maybe it's adults. I, as you know, as the Community Engagement Adult Programming Coordinator, focus more on those community connections and then adult programming. But we got tons of things for kids and teens and all of that as well. And that you can all find on our website. Or you can call the main library at 208-263-6930 for more information about any of these programs. But the website's probably easiest for most people, Susie.
I think that you have really good posters of upcoming events and you have that kiosk in the lobby. So when you go to the library, and I hope you go because it's actually the best library in the world. That's what I'm calling it.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm sure you can find out that way too, or just ask someone. But one of the things I just wanted to back up, you mentioned the outdoor garden. Mm-hmm. Do you know who helped start that?
Maybe.
Who was that?
Do you?
Mike Bauer, who was a KRFY broadcaster who moved to Michigan. He still has a show, the 70s and 80s show, and he was kind of in your position and did a lot of the preliminary work to get that garden going.
Oh, okay. So I had thought a person by the name of Michelle had helped with it, but, you know, lots of hands, you know, because mm-hmm. it was very volunteer initially.
Right.
And now we do have a part-time person that handles that as well as the seed-saving library. And by the way, that event we had a couple of months ago for the seed exchange in January, we got full drawers now of seeds, mm-hmm. guys. So those of you who are starting to want to do gardening, mm-hmm. we have awesome donations for that. And
you can actually be planting stuff right now. And there's seeds there at the library. So when you think about it, do most libraries have a beautiful garden that people can be a part of, or a seed catalog library? I mean, this is kind of unique in my mind.
Yeah, especially the garden piece, I think, in particular. Some do have seed libraries, but ours is much bigger and more extensive. I was at a regional library the other day, not in our district, and they had a little, you know, like 5 choices of seeds, where we've got little old card catalogs of drawers full of seeds.
What can we plant right now, Joyce?
You need the garden coordinator for that. I'm going to guess lettuces and things like that.
Sure. And peas, actually.
Yes.
Right. Anyways, that was a quick
I'm not the garden expert. I'll be honest. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. So really, our library and your program, Natural Connections, really expands our world. And I'm not going to go to Japan and learn how to make sushi. And I don't think that watching someone at a restaurant making sushi is going to teach me much about it. But the opportunity is now available this Saturday. So
right.
Do you want to talk about, and I just remind our listeners, we have Matt Dry here, who is going to be part of that. And we're going to get to the component that you're going to have, Matt, in just a bit. But you can't wait. We can't either. So, Joyce.
So this time, we've ended up with a bit of a cultural day, interestingly enough. And it started because of a woman who now lives here locally. Amy is from Japan originally. And she likes to bring students or involve students who come from Japan to get more involved in American lifestyle, to learn more about English by actually being here and talking to people. So she kind of started us off, and I'll get to their time slot. But once we had that and they wanted Japanese culture, things started falling into place. So our first one is at 10 a.m. Heaven is walking the Camino de Santiago. And Susie's here raising her hand, so she must know this pilgrimage walk in Spain.
I know several people that have done it, and I know that it is really more than you can imagine. So it'll be fun to hear about it at your event on Saturday.
Yeah, he's done it more than once. It's 500 miles, I guess, and he's even written a couple of books, which he's been generous enough to donate to our library collection. So if you guys haven't had a chance to read his books, you can come to the library and check those out soon. And then also come to this program. He's going to show lots of pictures, share his experience, but also let folks know, like, if they're interested, what's involved.
There's a lot of nitty gritty. I do have a connection to it. My son walked it with his father, Tom Prez, and what an opportunity for a father and a son to spend 500 miles walking together.
Wow, I can't imagine doing it with my dad, that's for sure.
And it's quite an event, and it changes kind of internally how you look at the world a little bit, but also experiencing the Spanish culture. And we're a lot of this, these natural connections, is experiencing other cultures.
And other opportunities that you might not normally do, you know, if you've never canned and suddenly you need to learn how to can or want to learn how to can, or how we've done renewable energy programs about solar and all other kinds of things. So these are really an opportunity for people to come together and say what they want to learn and also share their expertise and area. And so then that leads us, so that'll be at 10 o'clock, and that's Stephen Towles will be doing that. And he's an Idaho native and a retired Unity minister, and he's done it numerous times.
And I just want to point out, I just am noticing your write-up, this session, I don't know if all the sessions are available on Zoom.
No, not this one.
Okay.
Yeah, the natural connections we don't usually do on Zoom.
I'm just reading
because
wrong.
We, you know, they're often a hands-on experiential piece, and it's like an event day.
Okay.
But you can come last minute.
Okay.
You don't have to register.
So it's this Saturday again, starting at 10.
Right. His program will start at 10 a.m. And then at 11:30, that's when we're going to shift into a taste of Japanese culture that was inspired by Amy that I mentioned. And she has two young ladies from Japan who are currently here for about a week or two trying to, you know, learn more about how to speak English and through experiencing the American culture versus just being in the classroom. And the first one will talk about Japanese calligraphy. We'll demonstrate it, and we'll give you an opportunity to be able to try it out using the traditional, she's going to demonstrate with the traditional ink stone and how you make the ink that way. And so folks will get to try their hand at Japanese calligraphy. And then the second student will talk about ninja and some of the history or knowledge or information about that. And instead of making one of their implements that are people would recognize, like to us Americans, it looks kind of like a silver star, we'll make that out of origami paper. So we'll do it that way. And we'll kick that session off at 11:30 with the sushi making that you had already mentioned. So a local gentleman was trained in how to make sushi, and he's going to explain technique and how to get the sushi rice done properly. And while he's doing that, he'll be making it for us, some vegetarian versions for those of you who don't eat fish. It'll be strictly vegetarian. And then you get to sample it and ask questions and hear about that. And that's how we'll lead into the young ladies sharing about their culture directly from their own personal experience.
Students from Japan will be with us.
Yes, and they'll also probably share a little bit about what it's like to be a student in Japan, maybe a little bit in contrast. I don't know. It's a little bit of a surprise. There's going to be some videos they're doing and
putting it together.
Yeah.
I like the title of the 11:30 one. It's called A Taste of Japanese Culture.
Right. And the first one he wanted us to call On a Roll Sushi.
Well, everyone probably loves sushi. I like the fact it's vegetarian. So good.
So that one will be a demonstration. You won't get to make it this time around.
Yeah.
It was a little bit too complicated for our library environment, but
it gets messy.
Right.
And then
the last one will be Living at One with African Nature at 2 p.m. And that's when we get to hear from Matt.
So you're here, Matt. We don't have to ask a bunch of questions. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are? What are you doing here in Sandpoint? I don't know if this is where you live mostly, but tell us everything that we should know or want to know. What do you want us to know?
Well, thank you so much for Joyce for including me in the program. I'm so excited to be a part of it. I am a safari guide in Africa. I've been doing this almost 20 years. And a lot of people say, well, what does that entail? Well, I take people out into the wilds of Africa. I operate in 13 different countries. And the primary aspect of my job is to educate and entertain and, of course, share all the wonders that Africa has to offer, from, of course, the iconic animals that everybody knows, the big five, the elephant, the lion, the leopard, the Cape buffalo, and the black rhino. And, of course, everybody's favorites, giraffes and zebras and the 27 different antelope you'll see. But it's kind of interesting how I got started. When I was a little kid, I wanted to be a zoologist. And then at 11, I found tennis. And then tennis became my whole life. I played until I was about 30. Body did not want to continue. So became a director of a tennis club till about 36. And I was on a trip in Africa. Although I was making lots of money, I was not terribly happy with the life as a director. I really wanted to be a player. Went to Africa on a trip, met a guy who was a safari guide, and I was asking him a million questions. And he said, listen, Matt, just stop. He's like, this job would be perfect for you. You would be perfect for this job. There are schools you can go to, and you could be doing all these things that I've been telling you about for the past 3 hours for the rest of your life. And I'm like, well, of course, nobody knows in America that in Africa there are schools to go on safari. So, to be a safari guide. So I came home from my trip. One of the things he said to me after, he was this big, giant South African guy, and he pointed at me and he said, you follow your heart. And the minute he said that, I knew that was it. I came home at the end of August, found a school for a year, and that would give me all my credentials. Sold my house, my car, gave everything I owned to charity, and went to Africa to go to the school, get my credentials, and I've been a guide ever since.
Any regrets?
None. It's best decision I've ever made in my whole life.
You followed your heart.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
So, and 20 years.
Yeah, almost 20 years, uh-huh. Yes. Yes.
The name of your company is called Africa...
It's TIA Safaris.
This is Africa.
Yes, TIA Safaris.
Okay.
And, also...
You've written books.
Yes, and I'm so sorry I haven't gotten those to you, Joyce. You will have them on Saturday. I will bring them for the library. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm so happy to donate, of course. Yeah, those are short stories. About my experiences as a guide, you know, my dangerous encounters with animals, my hilarious encounters with animals, my hilarious clients that try to prove the fact that it's amazing that some people make it to adulthood and survive adulthood. But yeah, really, really stories that bring out the best of my experiences as a guide in Africa.
Well, you said that you've been doing this for 20 years. I'm thinking, what countries are you stationed in, and what have you seen in the changes over those 20 years?
Ooh,
I know.
That's
big question.
Huge question about the changes. I operate in 13 different countries, four in East Africa, which would be Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Rwanda. And when the Congo is not plunged into chaos and is a giant mess. I will also take people to see the gorillas in the Congo because it's significantly cheaper. But it's been years and years, unfortunately, that the Eastern Congo hasn't been an absolute mess. And then in Southern Africa, countries like South Africa, of course, Zimbabwe, Zambia, Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique, Eswatini. So, as I said, 13 different countries down there.
And do you have to get certified in each country, or do your credentials kind of give? I mean, you have to license your company or something in each
yes,
country.
Yes, of course. In terms of being a guide, South Africa has a program sponsored by an organization called FGASA, which is the Field Guide Association of Southern Africa, which is known to be the best safari guiding program in all of Africa. So, for example, we had a young woman in our in the year-long program with me who came down from Kenya, where they have a very good program there for guides, but she knew that FGASA was the best, so she came down to South Africa to train. As an operator, so I use companies in Africa as my suppliers, which is the best way to do it, in the sense that it's kind of a part of giving back to Africa. Because I could own companies in Africa, and right. I get to use suppliers that have employees that are attached to. Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So back to the thought of over the 20 years, what you've seen the changes in the industry, we'll call it, the safari industry.
Mm. One of the most wonderful things is that everybody wants to preserve. Everybody in the industry want to preserve, of course, as much of the local cultures as well as the wild places. So conservation efforts have skyrocketed everywhere to make sure that communities are involved more and more in these conservation efforts around wild areas. It's one of the real true secrets, not only in Africa, but around the world, about how conservation efforts succeed. Because if people around those areas are benefiting with monies that come from the natural reserve, so they can build schools and hospitals and give people jobs within the parks and whatnot.
No, I didn't mean to stop. No. I was just going to say, it sounds like the cycle really works there.
It absolutely does.
With the conservation, creating an industry that supports, and the money just keeps, stays in-house.
Right.
More than anything.
Exactly. And what's a wonderful thing as well is that everything is becoming more and more sustainable. So, for example, in the Maasai Mara, where the Maasai live in Kenya, they're in lots of places, but that is way back in the early 1900s, they were sort of in the same way that our Native Americans were pushed to reservations. They were pushed out to this place called the Lowita Plains, and the Maasai Mara ended up being the area that they were able to control. So it's kind of not a great analogy, but in the same way that Native Americans benefit from having casinos on their area that is designated theirs, the Maasai have the Maasai Mara as a massive, massive money-making benefit for them. And the Maasai living there take care of that, and then all the communities benefit from that. So it's and they've made it more and more sustainable. So, for example, you were able to drive what they call off-road to see, like, say there was a lion that's 500 yards out. You could just drive that 500 yards out. Well, now you're not allowed to leave the roads, which is fantastic, because if you're driving out across the grasslands, you're running over birds and you're squashing tortoises. And I know it sounds terrible, but it's true.
Right.
And then if you have enough cars all going out there, because lions will lay there like all cats, they sleep 20 hours a day. The lions will be out there, and then they create another road. And then the more roads that you have, unfortunately, the less.
So preserving the plains.
So preserving, yes, is a huge part, right. And that is a part of everybody's learning more and more over the years how to make safarying more eco-friendly.
So have you found that the damage is there irreparable damage? Like, has the territory shrunk in terms of the natural environment where you were saying that there's conservation going on? Or has it been able to, after all those roads coming up, Mm-hmm. Has it been able to reclaim itself?
Or? Yes, 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 absolutely, absolutely. So the biggest problem everywhere on Earth in like these zoological locations where people would come to visit is encroachment, is human encroachment. One of the problems, for example, around the Serengeti and around the Masai Mara being the northernmost part of the Serengeti ecosystem in Kenya, is that now, for example, there's many things, but one of the main problems is that wheat farms are cropping up all along the edge of what is designated the Masai Mara. So when you don't have a buffer zone between areas that you would call quote unquote civilized and these natural places, the animals literally where they live ends, and then farms begin. And then of course you have one of the biggest issues is animal human conflict. You know, you walk outside, you've just planted this fantastic fruit trees, and a herd of elephants has eaten them to the ground. It's a real issue. Or like the Maasai, which I will speak about on Saturday, you know, they are pastoralists. So, and they have lived in harmony with nature forever, but they have their cattle out and they get eaten by lions. But now what's wonderful is most places where, because lions, their numbers have dropped 90% since 1950.
Whoa.
90%.
There's an impact
from 300,000 lions in about 1950 to only about 30,000 lions left in the wild in Africa.
So those are the changes you've seen in 20 years.
Yes, yes. So the governments in many of these places, when there is animal wildlife conflict, the governments will say a lion kills two cattle. Well, they inform the government, and then the government will compensate them for those cattle that were lost in that predatory experience.
That would be an interesting class to teach, just what you're talking about now.
I absolutely could, and would be happy to.
In a high school. I mean, for that experience to be shared.
And actually, you know, Susie, that's great that you bring that up. When I met with Matt, you know, when I meet people to see what they might want to talk about or what they want to offer the community, one of the things he did mention to me, in addition to wanting to do this at the library, was possibly going to some assisted living facilities and sharing experiences, or in like the schools and doing some programs there. So if there's any teachers out there listening that might be interested, you know, that might be a thing too. You can get a sneak preview this Saturday, and his program, Living at One with African Nature, will be starting at 2 p.m. and his focus will be on the Maasai that he's spoken of, and once again adding that cultural aspect. And how can we, you know, so many of us here in North Idaho really do care about living in connection with the land. We've got a lot of homesteaders, we have a lot of folks who care about sustainability and just value nature. And so it'll be great to hear how this iconic tribe is managing in these times. And I like the idea of paying them for the cattle versus just automatically killing the lions. And I personally think we could learn some things from that here in this country.
Yeah, finding a balance in nature and human impact as the humanity becomes more. How we can do that, and it is possible. Your example and your experience is a little beta show or something, you might call it. But a couple more questions, but I want our listeners to know this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to The Morning Show. Susie Prez, and I'm here with Matt Dry and Joyce Jowdy from the library. Matt is from, he's got a business called
TIA.
This is Africa, TIA. And he'll be one of the presenters at the Natural Connections event program at the library this Saturday. We're just talking about that. I have a couple more questions for you, Matt. Language in Africa. I know you said 13 different countries. Is it 13 different languages you have to learn, or are they English-oriented?
So, you know, the history of Africa is fascinating. The Africa, a lot of people don't know. People like to say to me, "Oh, I've always wanted to visit the country of Africa." Well, the country of Africa, quote unquote, is split up into 54 actual countries. So Africa has the most languages in one continent in the world, over 1,000 languages. So even where I operate, for example, Tanzania, which is where I will be focusing this weekend on the Maasai in the Serengeti in Tanzania, there are 143 different tribes, all of which speak different languages.
Okay, so you're not learning all those.
No,
does know way more than some of us.
So the main language in East Africa, Rwanda is now teaching more because they've all become an economic entity. Those four that I mentioned, Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, they're teaching Swahili more in Uganda and Rwanda, so that, as I said, as the economic community grows, they have the common language, right. Yeah, Swahili. But many, many, many languages, yeah.
Yeah, and in terms of the main, in that area, because I had the privilege to go there a number of years ago, English is spoken on the east area, but not so much on the west or the south, I don't think. French is, in terms of colonized languages.
Sorry, what I meant to say about in history is that it was actually in the early 1890s, there was a thing called the Berlin Conference, where 14 countries across the world got together and divided up in Berlin. People who had never even seen the continent sat down and divided up the continent of Africa into the states, the countries that we know now. Wow. So it was colonized, and the British were the largest colonizers of Africa. So English is one of the languages that you will find almost everywhere.
So we're going to hear all about it on Saturday at Natural Connections. And your segment starts at 2 p.m., and it's in the main lobby or the main rooms over there on the left.
The community rooms at the Sandpoint Library specifically.
Yeah.
And for those of you who might not be as familiar as some of us would like, that's at 1407 Cedar Street in Sandpoint.
Can't miss it.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. Matt's excited to share his experience with the world.
Because you're also going to have visuals, too.
Yes,
and
will
indeed.
And
your stories about wild animals.
Beautiful animals.
Beautiful wild animals, which is something quite unique when you think about it. We have bear and lynx and mountain lions here living up in the woods. You can't see them most of the time. But in Africa, it sounds like, from my understanding, they're more common wandering the plains.
Well, many of the places where I take people, my favorite places are these places called glens, which would be glamorous tents. It's the best way to do it. And there are no fences in these areas. So, like, for example, I'm writing my third book right now, and one of the stories that is how I walked in the morning, it was dark, didn't see, walked right up into a bull elephant. No more than 25 feet. And I you cannot run from an elephant. They will chase you down and turn you into strawberry jam.
So you had to make friends.
So I literally had to stand there. I could see him. He was already angry because I approached him because I didn't see him. He stepped out from behind these bushes that just barely covered him and scared him. So he was already at the point where he was thinking, should I turn Matt into strawberry jam or not?
Yeah.
And I literally stood there, my heart beating thunderously in my chest, and just talked to him, literally talked him into not killing
me. Highly intellectual
animals.
Yes,
very intelligent. Brilliant. Yeah. Very, very intelligent.
Wow. So they'll hear stories like that.
Yes.
So what age group of people do you think, Joyce? This is an adult program.
Yeah, usually the Natural Connections, the content of the material is focused towards the interests of adults. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, teens are welcome as well. And then this time, to be honest, it's going to be much more of a spread. It's who would be interested in these kinds of things. It's not geared towards little kids, but I know some of these topics might interest. And with the students from Japan coming, being younger themselves, I'm sure they'll draw a younger crowd this time around, too. So it's up, you know, a lot of times we'll see sometimes teenagers with their parents, and that's all cool.
And yeah. I can tell you that my presentation is for all ages.
Sure.
Everybody will enjoy it, particularly the photos of the animals, how colorful the Maasai are, and certainly anybody will enjoy that.
So we encourage you to come out this Saturday to the Sandpoint Library for this month's edition of Natural Connections, starting at 10. Get to learn about the Camino de Santiago, and then we'll transition in Spain, and then we'll transition to Japan at 11:30. We'll do learning about sushi, Japanese calligraphy, as well as learning about ninja and a little bit about what it's like maybe to be a student in Japan, and a high school student or the equivalent thereof. And then we'll end the day at 2 p.m., with Matt, who you've heard today, speaking about some of his experiences, but also with a focus on that conservation and that ability to work with the land and the traditions of the Maasai culture. And so a bit of a cultural day to get us into the new summer, look outside of our own local window and get a picture into what it's like somewhere else.
Well, I have to say, there's other things going on at the library, too. You have a few more minutes to kind of tell us what's going on.
All right. Next Saturday, that's the first Saturday of April, which I believe is the 5th. And that'll be our next open mic at Evans Brothers. So some of you have come out for that.
What's that?
That is an open mic where you can come and perform, get your 5 minutes on stage, music, storytelling, spoken word, poetry, comedy, performance art, whatever it is, whatever your creative form of expression is, all is welcome, 5:30 to 7:30. You sign up for a 5-minute slot, and it can be original or not original, so no pressure there. And or you can just come and be part of the audience. You know, every performer, as I've told everybody on the air every time, needs an audience. So encourage you to come out. This is probably like the 4th one we've done, and been getting record numbers, great community support. So 5:30 to 7:30, April 5th.
April 5th, that's on a Saturday evening.
Yep.
What a fun thing to do.
Saturday evening at Evans Brothers, who, you know, has been awesome supporter of this. And, you know, they even did that Book Nook coffee blend special for us last year, if you recall, and donated some proceeds from that, from local purchases. So that's coming up. And then also, and also the next Natural Connections will coincidentally be the last Saturday of April as well, the 26th. And as many of you know, that's right around the day after Arbor Day, as well as the week after Earth Day. And so one of the things we're going to be doing is a tree planting. You'll learn how to plant trees properly and care for them by actually doing it in the yard of the library. We're going to gain some trees. Ulala Arboriculture will be doing that. And then also you'll have access, hopefully, to some arborists, to give you information. And we'll hopefully have some seedlings to give away as well. And also, some of you in the community might be familiar with Foster Klein, who's lived here for quite some time. He is going to be doing a program on love and logic. And I'm not a parent myself, but I hear from other locals that that's quite an important topic for them. And he's himself has written books and all sorts of things. And then we have a hands-on opportunity. We're going to be making some Scandinavian stars. That's like, I don't know. Are you familiar with that, Susie?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I'm thinking because of your Waldorf days, you might have. It's a folding, hand-sewing kind of technique of you make an ornamental-type star. I don't know a lot about it. That one's going to be pretty much like 90% hands-on. Even more so than some of the other ones. So that'll be really cool for any crafters or wannabe crafters. I hear it's relatively easy.
And that's in April?
That's April 26th, the last Saturday of the month. And then we're going to conclude with a woman who's also had a very interesting background. She's from Northwest Integrative Physiotherapy, and she's going to talk about the human body is the only machine for which there is no spare parts. So you're going to discover some hacks to keep yourself mobile. She's a physical therapist, a functional therapist. So step into your healthy future and, you know, performance. She's worked with, you know, Olympic athletes, as well as folks who've become paraplegic, you know, all sorts of the spectrum. And she's really phenomenal. I think we're going to learn a lot of how to take care of our bodies and keep ourselves moving. So please come out, everybody.
Share fantastic. The diversity of everything. Yeah. Joyce, Jody.
Yes.
Tell me your title.
Community Engagement and Adult Programming Quarter at the East Bonner County Library District. And remember, you can find out more about all this stuff at ebonnerlibrary.org and encourage you to come to the Sandpoint Library. And remember, if you can't come in person, there's lots of digital services. We have a bookmobile. We have a library of things. You know, I hope somebody took out the telescope when we had all that planetary alignment the other week. And, you know, got to see it. All sorts of things at
exactly.
the library.
Well, thank you for coming in. And Matt Dry, one of the presenters at this Saturday's upcoming March 29th, Natural Connections. Your portion starts at 2 o'clock. It's called Living at One with African Nature. It sounds exciting. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
It's always nice to have you, Joyce. And
thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your adventures in Africa.
And I hope you get to enjoy the sun today, Susie. You're kind of in a dark spot here.
Well, I definitely am done here at noon, so I'll be out walking
right.
around. We're going to take a slight break. I have a great song queued up for you. And then Phil Huff, the executive director of Friends of Scotsman Peaks Wilderness, will be coming in to talk to us about their upcoming Wild and Scenic Film Festival that's this Friday night. And just a shout out to Evans Brothers. They are an underwriter at KRFY too. So
awesome.
And so is Scotchman's Peak. So this song is called, it's called Ukrainian Now. It's by Tom Paxton and John McCutcheon. It's a beautiful song. Enjoy that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is The Morning Show. This is 88.5 KRFY, your independent community radio station for North Idaho. We'll be right back. Tom Paxton, John McCutcheon, Ukrainian Now.
When I open the paper, check out the news on TV. It's pictures of buildings exploding, is all that I see.
And that was Tom Paxton and John McCutcheon, Ukrainian Now. We're live back in the studio for the rest of the Wednesday morning show. I'm Susie Prez, and I'm here now with Phil Huff. He's the executive director of Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. And we're... Hi, Phil.
Good morning, Susie.
I don't know that we've ever had this interchange before.
It's been a while anyway.
Yeah.
Odd sitting on this side of the table.
It's easy to find you. You're just down the hall. But we have a reason for you to come in and finish up the show with us today, because you have a special event coming up that KRFY is a sponsor of. It's the Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
The Wild and Scenic Film Festival. It kicks off this Friday in Sandpoint. This year, we're holding three stops in Sandpoint, Thompson Falls, and Libby. The one most of the listeners here will be interested in is Friday night at the Panada Theater. Doors open at 6, show at 7. Tickets can be found on scotchmanpeaks.org or at the Panada. It's a great lineup of films. It's our sixth year hosting the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. This is our 20th anniversary, and we decided for the 20th anniversary we would take it on the road to the rest of the region. And also, the theme this year is perfect, Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart.
Wild at Heart. So a small committee of our board staff looked through all, I think it was 160 films to look at from this year's films and last year's, and curated the top, I think it's 10.
So some short, some longer.
Some short, some longer. The fan favorite's going to be, I'm going to predict, the very last one of the evening, The Lone Wolverine of the Wallowas.
Say that again. The Lone?
The Lone Wolverine of the Wallowas.
Wallowas. That's down south.
Down south, yeah. Oh. And the Wolverine, of course, an iconic critter of the wild, and one which the friends helped do a citizen science study in a few years back, so it's attracted a lot of attention, and a lot of our volunteers have a certain attachment to the Wolverine.
What is that attachment for you, just out of curiosity?
Well, having been one of the people who over 4 years went out in the winter and checked set and checked camera bait stations, put a lot of time and sweat into getting images, we didn't get any on our stations of Wolverine, but we did find lynx and marten and bobcat and a lot of other critters, and it was a great portal into the ecology of winter wildlands, into the ability for citizens to produce good scientific data. And although we didn't find any on our cameras in the study region, there was evidence of 8 wolverines being in the Idaho Panhandle, northwestern Montana area. So it established that they're here, and that's a really important thing for the game managers, for Idaho Department of Fish and Game and Montana Fish and Wildlife, so they could write up state action plans. And now in the last year and a half, almost 2 years, the wolverine's been placed on the threatened and endangered species list. So that baseline data is all the more important. We had about 300 volunteers who came out over the 4 years to help. And so we're hoping a lot of them come out to see the critter that they were looking for.
Right. Kind of a mascot for the, as you say, the lone.
Yeah.
The not sure they're there, but
not
found
sure,
them.
But we found that they're kind of a phantom. But they're not the only film of the evening. We do have some adventure films, some other ecology films, including Polar Bear Country, The Friends of Frog Pool Lane, which is, it's a children's movie, but people of all ages will appreciate it. It was one of my favorites that we saw. So come on out. We have two main sponsors that I would be remiss not to recognize. KRFY is one of our principal underwriters. Thank you to the station.
We love doing that.
And Idaho Forest Group. And then we also have about 24 other sponsors at various levels that we recognize throughout that evening and on our various media print.
So exciting. And you're taking it on the road. So you're going to Libby and Troy?
Libby and Thompson Falls.
Oh, way out.
Okay. Yeah, way out there. We'll be in Thompson Falls the following Saturday, April 5th, and then in Libby on Thursday, April 10th. With shows in Thompson Falls at the Rex Theater, for those who might be listening in. I know sometimes I pick up the signal all the way to Trout Creek, so we'll be at the Rex Theater on the Saturday, April 5. And then we'll be up in Libby at the Mackey Theater on Thursday, April 5th.
Well, I think that's really cool because Friends of Scotchman Peaks is not just a Sandpoint organization.
No.
It's really based in, because Scotchman Peaks is on the border with Montana, so... Yeah.
We cover the whole region, North Idaho, northwestern Montana. And for folks who are interested in the show, we have the basic admission. We also, with each of the stops, have a VIP pre-party. You can get a special package for that. You'll get admission to the free VIP party with the package, superstar package tickets, as well as reserved seating at the show. So you don't have to show up right when the doors open.
Right.
So it's a really great way to support the cause and also enjoy the camaraderie of other people who are interested in the same thing.
And there's other things going on besides the films. You have some raffles?
We have some wonderful raffle items, including a painting by Ed Robinson, who donates paintings every year. We have a set of gear, snowshoes from Larson's. We have stuff from Outdoor Experience, a lot of great outdoor gear-oriented things. One of the fan favorites is a flyover of the Scotchman Peaks. One of our board members donates every year, Chris Compton. And he's donated that to all three shows. So you can buy a raffle ticket and get a chance to fly over Scotchman Peaks.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds like fun. And see it in real life, close up and personal, without having to hike up there.
Yeah, that's right. It's the easy way to get the eagle's eye view of Scotchman Peak.
Just out of curiosity, how many times have you hiked Scotchman?
I stopped counting at least 25 times ago, and that was when I was at about 38, 39. So I'm somewhere up close to 70, probably.
It's an annual event, at least.
At least once a year, usually two or three times, depending on circumstances.
What triggered your interest in this portion of our wilderness areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so the really short answer is that I've grown up hiking all my life. My dad took me out into wilderness areas when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I really got hooked on that experience, from paddling the Allegash River in northern Maine to rivers in northern Ontario that we paddled all the way to Hudson Bay, and just really felt like that was a place for me to be. So in my adult life, my wife and I have hiked the Triple Crown, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and we've seen great opportunities for wilderness. We've also seen some examples of poor public lands management. Mm-hmm. So when we moved here and looked around 25 years ago and saw the Scotchman Peaks weren't wilderness yet but were proposed, something clicked in my head and go, I need to help maintain that's the wilderness characteristics of that area. So there'd be places available here locally for folks to get the same kind of experience we had hiked thousands of miles to get.
Well, that's really nice. Thanks for sharing that. Again, the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, sponsored by us, Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness. That's this Friday night here in Sandpoint. And you can get tickets at, again?
ScotchmanPeaks.org or at thepanada.org or at the door. They're mm-hmm. a little more pricey at the door, but do know that all of the funds come back to help us support our programs to get kids out in the winter for our Winter Tracks program, to get kids
excellent
out
program.
Year-round hiking, to keep trails open, to put out our mountain goat ambassadors to make sure people stay safe in mountain goat country. We do a lot of good work to maintain safe access to the area year-round and really provide an opportunity for people who are new to a wilderness hiking experience to do it in a comfortable, safe way.
Well, Friends of Scotchman Peaks Wilderness is doing great work. I love the work you're doing with the young people. And this is an ideal way because it's win-win. You get to see great films and support one of our iconic and very essential organizations that are helping our environment. So thank you very much, Phil, for coming in.
Thank you, Susie.
And we'll see you there at the film festival this Friday night at the Panada Theater. And folks, we're going to go out with a song. This is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. You can, tomorrow, let me just say real quick, Jack Peterson and Jim Healy will be talking with one of our newest broadcaster, Russ Tomlin, about his new show called Made You a Mixtape.
Oh, wow.
I know. Isn't that a great title? So they'll be talking with Russ. And hey, as we always say at the end, thanks for listening. This is a song by Michelle Schacht and Pete Anderson. It's called Oh, Susanna. Enjoy your day.